Osiris.
Hey everyone, it's Cam Hurt, host of the Best Show Ever podcast, and we have got a second season coming out very soon that I am very excited about. We've got some very cool special guests, including musical acts that we all love, like Karina Reichman, Daniel Donato, Jake Brownstein from Eggy, Rick and Peter from Goose, and many more. Tune in for new episodes dropping on Osiris Media March 5th on the Best Show Ever podcast. What's up, everyone? Welcome back to Best Show Ever Pod, the podcast where I interview people about the best concert they ever saw in their life. I'm your host, Cam Hurt, and this episode is a really cool one. We have got, from the Goose Chicks podcast, Leslie Mack, one of the more beloved hosts from the Osiris Podcast Network. Leslie's so cool. She has seen so many cool shows. She saw Phish a bunch through the 90s. She is a prolific Goose fan these days. You can catch her on the rail of almost any show. You pull up a video of Goose live, you might see Leslie swinging her hair in the front row. She has the coolest stories. She has seen a such cool variety of shows. We talk about, like I said, Phish, we talk about Goose, we talk about a whole bunch of other shows. I don't want to ruin too much. I don't want to do too much intro here. Sit back, relax, enjoy this conversation that I had with Leslie Mack from the Goose Chicks podcast. But first, enjoy a little bit of music from none other than Jesus and Fartfinger.
Hi, I'm Daniela Clark.
I'm Barbara Ann Wild.
And we are the Honest AF Show.
Our podcast is real, honest conversation with our celebrity friends and pros.
Covering our anything but average rock and roll lifestyles.
All while tackling the hell that is aging and the battle of beauty.
Oh yeah, nothing is off the table.
The Honest AF Show is available wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the best show ever. This is the best show ever. This is the best show, the best show ever. This is the best show.
Best show I ever heard.
I think I have to agree.
Ever. Yeah.
I mean, like I said, I'm trying to get all of the beloved Osiris host, and I know you from Goose Chicks podcast, but I almost know you better from the Goose live streams and you being front row at the Goose shows.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely my jam for sure. Being up close and personal with Goose is definitely my happy place for sure.
I mean, and you've seen some really good shows this summer. There's just, I mean, this summer specifically has just been fire.
It really has been. It's been just every show a barn burner. It was, you know, starting with Louisville, those two nights. I literally listened to the night two Louisville so much. I just love that show. And yeah, I mean, every show just built on each other one. And then, you know, SPAC was such a culmination of the entire summer's worth of music. It was beautiful and amazing. And my birthday, they played on my birthday, which was really amazing. So yeah, a lot of amazing memories from the summer tour. I tried to do as much as I possibly could. So it was neck break speed getting from place to place. I mean, Resonance was an entire experience. I haven't fully even digested it, to be honest. It was such an interesting place and the shows were really spectacular. So were the other acts as well. I haven't even gone through my I shot a few shows. I shot Great Blue and a few other folks, Kitchen Dwellers. I haven't even gone through those photos yet. So I have a lot of content to sort through from the summer. Yeah.
You just sitting back and listening to some of those shows, or like, what are you listening to right now while you're waiting for more Goose shows to happen?
I started just revisiting the whole summer from Louisville forward. So I was doing it in chronological order. I think I'm on Portland, Maine right now. So I'm in the middle of that show. And so for me, when I do these re-listens, I did it with Spring Tour and I did it with Winter and Fall last year. I just do it in chronological order. And I just, whenever I'm doing anything that warrants music, I just go right back to pick up where I left off. And sometimes I go back to specific songs after I listen to a show and be like, oh, that was really good. One that comes to mind, I keep going back to that Louisville night too, because it was just so spectacular. And the Cali magic. I don't know why something about, if folks are listening to that show, from about 6 minutes, 30 seconds forward, Rick's final solo in that song is like, it just is otherworldly. It just really, it hit me in my chest when I heard it live, and it just continues to. So yeah, so there's a few songs and a few shows like that that I keep going back to. July 3rd was spectacular as well. What an experience with the fireworks, and you know, watching them watch the fireworks while they're playing. I think it's the most I've seen Rick's eyes open in a performance ever. So that was pretty sweet. And also was really packed. I think I've been to as packed a show as that one, just in terms of the volume of people they stuffed into that space was really a lot. Yeah.
It didn't look like a huge space, but it looked like a huge amount of people.
It was. I mean, they said it was supposed to seat or have like 3,500, and they sold 5,000 tickets. So it was definitely pretty packed in there. I think Pete mentions it when he comes out. I was like, wow, there's a lot of you guys in here. And also, because it was the night of the fireworks, like local folks were more, apt to be around. And so it was just really crowded. Like every balcony, every hotel balcony was full. It was just a lot going on. Yeah.
What a scene. Mm-hmm. What a scene. I had the opposite goose journey this summer, where I only saw one show in the spring. So I just go back and listen to that show 100,000 times.
Yeah.
Because it's the show that I went to.
I know that's going to be me this fall. I'm doing very little this fall. I've just my busy time at work. So that's why I hit it so hard for spring and summer, knowing like, I'll have to take my foot off the gas a little bit and do some more couch touring in the fall. So yeah. But yeah, it's spring and summer. These were just amazing, you know, even ending spring tour at Days Between Fest. I mean, those shows were really great. Yeah. And it's been wonderful seeing two fests this year that were basically goose festivals, you know, where they headlined two nights in a row. And that was really unique experiences compared to last year's, you know, festy sets that were just, you know, one small hour and 15 minute taste of goose, I like to refer to it, because definitely leaves you wanting more.
I mean, the growth for them has been like, you can see it in almost every aspect of what they do. Yeah. Like whether it's their equipment or whether it's the jams themselves, whether it's like some songs becoming better, whether it's, you know, but also in that, like just getting some headlining sets. Yeah. Big massive summer. Pretty cool. Couch tour isn't so bad.
Love couch touring. It's fun. I usually do like the rest of the girls from Goose Chicks Pod. We usually are all doing it together. So we're in our group chat, like, you know, talking about the show. We're toying with maybe doing a couple of shows where we'll do a Zoom during couch touring and kind of invite people to come and join us and chit chat, or, you know, just be there together with each other. So look for some more on that. We've been toying with it, just figuring out which shows make the most sense to do it. Maybe Red Rocks, although I'm going to Red Rocks, but the rest of the crew is not. So, yeah.
It'd be kind of cool if you, you like zoom in from the front row. You'd be like, that's
amazing. I know, except for I don't take my camera out at goose shows. So it's like this whole thing. People will capture it. There's plenty of photographers there, actual professionals that will capture anything that needs to be captured. Nobody needs my two cents from the front row. And I'm also just in the zone. Yeah.
You have no videos, no pictures.
I'm trying to think, even the fireworks night, I took a couple of pictures during the fireworks, and I try and get like one selfie of myself with my sunglasses, because I like to see the band reflected in them. So I'll take that one shot. But other than that, no, like my birthday show, I didn't take any photos at all. There's a few before they started and a few after the show, but nothing during the show. I didn't even take my phone out. I was just there to experience it. So yeah.
Even when I'm not front row, it's not like I'm like, oh, thank God I took a bunch of pictures.
No.
You know, like it's to people listening, maybe adopt a little bit of Leslie's, you know. style here, because I think it is. I mean, of course, you got to take a video, you got to take a picture during some moments, and like there's so many videos that I have on my phone of me, and then in the first 3 seconds, you can hear me going, "I'm sorry, I have to. I'm sorry, I have."
Yeah, yeah. You're like, I just have to do this. I have to do this. Yeah, it's true. There's a few that just will happen. I will say I tend to do more videoing at fish shows, just because CK5. I mean, you know, I could talk for hours about Chris Caruto, but just, you know, sometimes the visuals are so stunning that I just feel the need to capture them for myself, just to like capture that mental memory. And there's been times where I'm glad I did. And then some I'm like, I should have probably taken more, like the postponed by MSG last year, you know, the whole Earth Day thing. So we were there and we had like perfect seats to see it all. I was so amazed. Like by the time I took my phone out to take a picture, like it was sort of in the middle of it, because I just was so blown away. I couldn't have even imagined something that spectacular happening. And so, you know, fish always has the potential to just do that to you, to just, yes, you know, lay you flat back and just like, wow, I never even expected something like this could be conceived, much less executed at the high level that they're able to do so. All hats off, because it was really amazing.
All five of them, the band and CK5, pulling off some of the coolest stuff you'll ever see.
So cool.
Well, you know, let's get into some of your best shows here. I feel like you've got some really good ones.
Yeah, let's go. Let's do it.
Before we get into like the best and the like honorable mentions, I like to do the your first and worst shows. So what was the first concert you ever went to in your life?
The first concert I ever went to, now I'm from New York City. I grew up in Brooklyn, New York. So this is separate from like Broadway shows, because like in school, folks that are not from New York City, it's a very common thing. You get to go to like see matinees and stuff. So I'd seen things like that. But as far as a concert, my first concert was New Kids on the Block in 1988 on Long Island in Westbury, New York. My mom took me and one of my best friends, was in junior high school at the time, as one would be, going to see New Kids on the Block as their first concert. It was an amazing experience. My mom had surprised us with the tickets, so we didn't think we were going to get to see them, and we were huge fans, and it was just everything you think of, you know, of teen idoldom and teen, you know, just preteen screaming and, you know, just being so excited to see, you know, see them right in front of you and all of those things. It was really just such a great first memory of a concert. And they've always, and I've been a New Kids on the Block fan since then. I went to see them last year, literally. I try to go see them when they come to Charlotte. They put on an amazing show still. They're so connected with their fans and just sweet, sweet people. And yeah, I've had many great memories with New Kids on the Block. So it was a great first show to go to for me.
We talk about New Kids on the Block with Meg Leona a little bit too, not to spoil anything, but she also saw New Kids on the Block. And we talk about, they are really like the originator of the, or they kind of paved the way for all the boy bands that are going to come through in the 90s. Like,
absolutely. They laid the groundwork. I mean, their parents ran their fan club. Like, it was very much, and this is like when you had to like send a check, you know, to join the fan club and get the newsletter, you know, all of these like old tech, old school type of things. And so their connection with their fans have really remained, because they had such a solid one-to-one direct connection with folks in the foundation. And so they've been able to stay on tour. They do like a cruise every year that I keep threatening that I'm going to go on. They do it up, and they do their show that they do now. They usually bring like Salt and Peppa, Naughty by Nature, and Vogue. It's usually like five acts. And so it's wall to wall music. There is no downtime and there's no opening act. They craft the show around all of these hits that all of these acts have. And then they just like switch on stage, like literally high five each other. And it just goes from hit to hit to hit to hit. And it is so, so entertaining and so much fun. I think Rick Astley was there last year as well. So he got to come and do some of his hits. It was just, it's just really fun. It's a fun, fun, fun time.
You just get that nostalgia overload.
It is. Overload. It's literally overload. Everybody just turn. I just revert to my 13-year-old self again, like in an instant. And it's fantastic.
It's got to be crazy to see, like, maybe now people with kids that, like, went and saw New Kids on the Block in the 80s and, like, the mom and the child or, like, whoever's there are both screaming.
Absolutely. And that's exactly what happens. It's so like that. And then they do so many things. Like, I think the last two, I've gotten, like, selfies with Donnie. The last show, he took my phone and took the selfie from the stage of me with him. So, like, it's that level of just, they're just so open and so generous with their fans. Something that I feel with Goose as well. So it's a hallmark of, you know, bands that I think engender a really rabid fan base. Do that. They make sure they keep those connections, you know, personal and direct, and they do a good job of it. So yeah.
And I think Goose does such a good job of being accessible. If anything, maybe take a page out of New Kids on the Block's book. Trevor, maybe grab a phone one of these shows and
just a show, just grab
picture.
It.
Do the Leslie shot where into your sunglasses with the crowd behind.
With the crowd, hey. Very cute. That would be very nice, Trevor.
It would be very cute. It would be very nice. That's awesome. What about the worst concert you ever saw in your life?
So I hate to say this. So I do have a worst concert, but it's not a worst performer. And I've seen them in other places and it's been fine. But it is a Blues Traveler concert, which was at a Balloon Fest in New Jersey. So we had gone for the Balloon Fest thing. It's like all these huge hot air balloons. You get to go up in one and then it's like they all take off at the same time at sunset. It's beautiful. And then they have sort of this concert component to it. And so Blues Traveler was headlining and, you know, we went over to see them and I've seen Blues Traveler plenty of times. I've seen them play New York, New Year's Eve in Chicago. I've seen them probably, I don't know, at least 10 or 12 times over the years. And, love John Popper. My husband plays the harmonica. We're really big fans of him and his instrument, but it was just really clear. This was a sad show for them. And you could kind of see it. People were not paying attention. And then when they got around to playing Runaround, you just saw like the whole crowd be like, oh, wait, I know this one. And you could just see their like shoulders like fall like, oh, God, this hit is like the only thing any of these people want to hear. And we are so much bigger than this one song. And so it's only the worst because of that. Cause I could just see that the performers, that the band was just, you know, not thrilled to be there. So it's not a knock on Blues Traveler cause I really do love them, but it was a sad show. So that's my worst.
And that's tough because it's not like a Blues Traveler show where all of the fans showed up. It's like a situation where people are showing up for other things and then they're like, oh, there's a band I don't really know. You know, like that's hard for a band to work through, I'm sure. You know, and like, yeah, everyone knows Runaround, but like how many times have those guys played Runaround?
And you could see just the like, it just washed over them like, oh, God,
man.
So it was, you know, it was just sad. And again, no hit on Blues Traveler. I love them. And I've seen them, you know, play their shows and they're fantastic and really engaging and unique and wonderful. But this was not that. So that was my worst one. Yeah.
Yeah, and a bunch of like legitimately really great musicians in that band. Obviously John Popper, but the rest of that band is like
so good.
Talented. And they're such a sound. They're such like a distinct sound from a certain time that is kind of timeless. I think that they like kind of fit in a lot of decades. And, you know, I'm sure maybe there's a couple people in the crowd that day that are like, this is the one time I got to see Blues Traveler.
Blues Traveler, yep.
That was the best. However,
you had
the context. Yeah. You knew that it was.
I did. I was like, this is not a Blues Traveler show at all. This is just like, oh, yeah. So that was my worst, which I guess, you know, is not that bad considering the amount of shows I've been to across genres and decades. But that was definitely the one that I remember being like, oh, I felt bad being there really was really why it was the worst for me.
I'm not going to put that on Blues Traveler. I'm going to put that on the crowd and the balloons.
Absolutely. It was definitely on the balloons, definitely on the crowd. Yeah. They weren't there for them. Yeah.
Incredible. Well, it's hard. Like you said, you've seen so many shows.
Yeah.
It's so hard to pick the best one. So I like to do honorable mentions. Do you have any shows that you would be remiss if we wouldn't bring up?
Yes, I have a few, and apologies for the list being a little longer than you probably would like. So
I want them all.
I have to mention, we saw Adele play World Cafe Live in Philly, June of 2008. Wow. 19 had been released that January. Her Grammy announcement had just happened, and it's a small venue. And she just pretty much sang the whole album, and I don't know what else to say except for that voice on a stage with that small of a space was really transcendent and really a memory I cherish forever and ever. Similarly, we saw Corinne Bailey Rae play World Cafe Live in 2006, and her album had been out, and I was absolutely obsessed with it. Like, it was sort of embarrassing. Like, I knew every single word, and it had only been out for like a month or something. And so I was right up front, and I was like mouthing the words to every song. And she literally looked at me at one point and goes, "You know every word." I'm like, "I do. I really do know every word." So that was really amazing. I also would mention Jill Scott. We saw her at the Theater of the Living Arts in Philadelphia just before her second album, Beautiful Human Words and Sounds, Volume 2 came out. And she debuted the whole album at that show for the first time. And so there were so many songs. I think Golden had been released as a single, but the rest of the album hadn't been played anywhere. And so like Rasool, all these amazing songs off of that album, we got to hear for the first time with this amazing hometown crowd in Philly, which was just otherworldly. Fantasia Barrino, we saw in Chicago. And this was only special because somehow we got like these really close seats in the pit. And she sang directly to me. I have a video of it because I did whip my phone out. And I mean, literally like into my camera. It was really amazing. God. Just that connection with her. And she such an electrifying artist, especially with her gospel background. You know, she really embodies a lot of her music, and it's very physical with her. And so, yeah, that was really special. My first time on the rail for Goose was at the Joy Theater last year. And so that was really special for me. Those shows were really great, generally speaking, but it was really, really cool. Radio City Music Hall, Trey Siddon. I'm only giving this honorable mention because we weren't supposed to go. We were on a plane heading to New York for my niece's graduation on the 25th. And the photo of Trey's gear got uploaded to Reddit or whatever. And my husband Drew like looks at me and he's like, "I think Trey's sitting in with Goose tonight." And I go, "Well, are there tickets?" He's like, "What are you talking about?" I go, "We are going to New York like right now. So if there are tickets, like get some tickets." So he bought tickets. Yeah. And it was like a movie. We're taxiing, it's spinning to buy the tickets. And right when we take off, it like says it bought it. And then we have no internet service. We land. And by the time we land, now the picture has blown up everywhere. You cannot get a seat at the show. We like land, book it to our Airbnb, throw our shit down, and then run into the city to go to the show. So it was an amazing night, but also just we didn't know that morning we were going to have that experience. And so it was like the full gamut of emotions from, you know, realization to like being at the show, just like, "Oh my goodness, can't believe it." Ran into RJ, B, like literally in the lobby at the show. He's like, "What are you doing here?" I'm like, "I don't know. I just ended up here." So it was great. And then the last thing I would mention, something really recent, this January I was in New York City and got to see the worldwide debut of a piece called Songs in Flight, which featured Rhiannon Giddens, who's an amazing bluegrass and Americana artist. She's fantastic. This was, I still like, even right now, I'm still digesting it, but just to give some context for it, in 2019, Cornell University started a program called Freedom on the Move, which was a database of runaway ads from United States early newspapers. So it had like names, dates, descriptions, rewards. And so these ads were replaced by enslavers, kind of preserved snapshots of more than like 30,000 individual enslaved people who took their fate into their own hands. And this Songs in Flight kind of uses these ads as a jumping off point to create song, poem, movement, and memory to give some humanity to these individuals, because, you know, the ads themselves were oddly in... Placing an ad like this, you actually had to acknowledge the individual humanity of the person you were placing the ad about, because you had to describe them. They often would talk about their skills. It'd be like, oh, really, you know, really great sewer, or experienced blacksmith. Or so it was like this very strange thing of like in attempting to recapture them, you had to acknowledge the uniqueness of these individuals at the same time. And so the piece takes off from there. And I still am, it's still tumbling around in my head. And it was the worldwide debut. It was the first time it had been performed. And it was at the Met in New York City. It was just really, really special. And so that sticks out for me as a recent memory as well.
Yeah, and what a special venue to go get to see something like that at too. I mean, you're watching this, you know, this piece of theater and music that is like going to be moving. You could go see that in a park, and that's going to be moving. But you're sitting in the Met, you know, like watching these incredible stories. Yeah.
Just fantastic. And Rhiannon's so amazing. Karen Slack was a soprano. Reginald Mobley was a countertenor. Will Liverman, baritone, and Howard Watkins played piano. And it was really moving. They had some multimedia pieces into it. And it just was really something special. Yeah, it was really great.
Do you know how long that's running for?
It was just the one worldwide debut. And so it was sort of, it's been in process. And so this was the first time they performed it. And so what I understood is that they're going to be continuing to develop it and bring it to other cities and eventually. It was really something really special. Rhiannon was kind of the curator of the larger piece of it. So yeah, it was... I'm still, like I said, I'm almost speechless. I don't know really how to describe it.
Yeah.
It was one of those shows that I just was flat on my heels for. Just amazing. And we saw Rhiannon play with the Charlotte Philharmonic earlier this year, which I don't even know what to say about that. I mean, she performed an aria. She performed a funeral dirge. She performed an Irish shout dance in Gaelic. She performed bluegrass and country and blues. And it was really something special, all barefoot with her banjo. So yeah, if you can see Rhiannon Giddens anytime she is near you, go and see. Cannot say enough about it. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I'll hop on that too. Unbelievable. Also, it's got to be cool to see the opening night of something. I mean, not that any piece will ever like lose its luster, especially that piece or any of the pieces within it. But it's like so much emotion of just being the opening night, and then you're conveying these stories for the first time. You know, like, oh man, yeah, that had to be a special experience. Is that also something that you were up close for?
I was in the front row for that as well. No, I was in the front row for that as well. And it was very emotional. And yeah, like you said, you know, these folks have been working on this for quite some time. So, you know, their families were there and their loved ones were there and their professors were there and people that had, you know, helped them along in this journey, all of them. And so it was really, really special. There was like a little reception afterwards where everyone got to kind of mingle. And of course, ran into like two friends of mine that just happened to also be there, which was great. But yeah, it was very special because it was that first time of them kind of, you know, letting the world see this thing that they had been putting together. And Rhiannon mentioned they had been working on it like from different continents at different times, you know, depending on where each of them was. So it was, you know, really beautiful to see them all together and getting to perform it. It was really great.
Well, now it looks like we're going to have to step into your best show ever, which I know a little bit of what that. So we're going to be stepping into from like incredible opening night piece of beautiful theater at the Met into. Is it going to be Fish?
Of course it's going to be Fish. I mean, you know, you as soon as you contacted me, I was like talking to my husband and he was like, there isn't really a an argument, is there? I'm like, no, there's no argument. It is absolutely Big Cypress, the Millennium show.
Yeah.
For sure. There will be never anything that will ever be a better show than that show. And so, yeah, I count myself in the lucky number that got to take the trip all the way down to Alligator Alley and ring in the new century with the boys. It was fantastic. Amazing. Unbelievable experience.
So where were you at with your Phish fandom at that point? Like when you were getting the tickets for Big Cypress, like how deep in it were you? All that stuff.
I was not super deep. My husband has been a huge Phish fan for longer than I, so I kind of was ushered into my Phish fandom through him. And so he had been to like Lemonwill, Great Wench, and I want to say one other of their festivals before Big Cypress. And so once we started dating, I started going to shows with him. So I'd been to, we lived in Chicago at the time. We had just moved in together around then. And so we had gone to see a bunch of shows at Alpine Valley, a bunch of shows at Rosemont, a bunch of shows at Deer Creek. We went to Michigan at a time. He went to college there. So we went to Michigan to see a lot of shows there. And so I had seen quite a bit of Phish up until that point, but I wasn't, you know, I wouldn't call myself a Phish head at that point. I wasn't, I was just getting to the point where I knew songs I really wanted to hear, I would say. So it was a good time for me to go because I had some anticipation finally, like, okay, yeah, yeah, I'm looking forward to this or that. But it was my first Phish festival. So that was really unique. And I had been to other music festivals. I'd gone to like Lollapalooza and like a few others in the 90s, but this was definitely something else. And I didn't know what to expect. And honestly, none of us did because it was even unique from the Phish festivals that had come before it. So yeah, it was really special.
Mm-hmm. And you took that trip down from Chicago. Did you get there early or was there like a, were you stuck in that traffic that everyone always talks about?
Yeah. So our story was a little bit different. We did have some traffic, but we weren't in that long traffic jam. We're broke at the time, as you know, one is at that age in life. And so I remember we had to wait till like midnight to leave because we needed our direct deposit to hit our bank accounts before we could take off. We needed to get some money out before we left on the trip. So we sort of like waited till, I was working in restaurants at the time. So I think I got off work at like 11:30. Everything was packed. We like got everything in the car, like literally went to the bank, took the money out and hit the road, drove to Florida all overnight. And we met up with some friends that we were going to Big Cypress with that we did almost all of our Phish festivals with. Yeah, the same crew. And so we met up the day before in Florida. One of our friends, like his grandparents had like some sort of like trailer park situation in Florida. So we just kind of met up there and then got up early the next day and headed into the middle of Florida to Alligator Alley. And so it said 3 hours and it took us about 8 hours to get into the venue, which we thought was bad. But then when we got in and we saw where our campsite was, we realized that we really were among the first, you know, groups of people that got into the venue. And so we just ran around looking at everything. One of the things that sticks out, which is really funny, shout out to our friend Todd, was that all the porta potties were brand new at Big Cypress. So like when you went into them at that point, like the, you know, the like drill they do to like put the casing in, you could still see the plastic shavings. Like it was virgin porta potties for the entire venue, the entire place.
Untouched.
And so we were kind of amazed at that, just all over the place. And then as it got darker, we started seeing, really realizing how bad the traffic was, because at some point all you could see was just headlights. I mean, farther than you should be able to see, just headlights. And this was, you know, very late in the evening by that point. And we were just like, oh, we locked out. We thought we were, you know, in it, and we weren't in it at all. 8 hours was nothing compared to people we knew who were in it for 24 hours. And I was feeling bad for the locals because they were just kind of like running out of gas on the side of the road, going on a trip that usually takes them 22 minutes and like, who the hell are all these people? What are they doing here? So they were just kind of pulled on the side of the road, like waiting for people to bring them gas and things like that. So that was, that was our entry, yeah, our entrance to Big Cypress. So it was not as bad as other people's. And we had lots of time to set up camp and get our bearings and, you know, feel comfortable in the space, which was easy to do. I mean, they built a mini city for Big Cypress. I don't think people quite understand it. And I should, you know, just to plug After Midnight, the Osiris show about Big Cypress, everyone should definitely go listen to it because it really details a lot about the back end of things and the experience. But for me, I had never experienced a true temporal autonomous zone before Big Cypress, a place where people were really trying to live out a different way of being with each other in reality. And it was so evident as soon as we got onto the property that this was going to be a really transformational experience for me. And it definitely lived up to that.
Man. And yes, that's such a great podcast. You have to check out After Midnight. Speak a little bit to that city, because I think even through like pictures and through that podcast and through people's stories, it is kind of hard to capture like what that city was.
Yeah, so, you know, where everyone was car camping, they had street signs. So you knew you were at like 19th and such was where you were. So off just that alone, we were kind of amazed at this, how well thought out it was. And then it had sort of this downtown feel area where there were like little stores set up, and there was like a general store in there and main places for you to do things. And then there were all these other installations kind of set up in the woods. There was like a drum circle, and there were like lights that were out in there, and there was like a Ferris wheel and sort of a game section. And then of course there was the actual venue itself, where the big grass where they were going to be playing each day. And so yeah, all of that was just, you know, just like I said, that first day just wandered around and took a look at everything. And it was just overwhelming to me just thinking about how much planning and how much time they would have had to spend to execute all of this. It was just really something. Yeah.
It goes to show, I mean, obviously there's been some debacles and snafus recently, but it goes to show, I mean, if they're going to do a festival, they put so much of themselves into it, and they have in the past, that, and they think through every little aspect of what could be experienced at their festival. So it makes it hard for them to do it again, because they did it so well.
They did it so well in the 90s. And also this was, you know, I had mentioned earlier, just like, it was special for many reasons, but also this like idea of going into a new century was so big. Like, I don't think folks that weren't around then didn't quite realize just how all encompassing Y2K was. I mean, it was like all anybody would talk about, just like being able to be alive during this century mark and all of these different things. And then there was the secondary kind of like scare mongering that was going on, you know, planes were going to fall out of the sky and all the, you know, bad things were going to happen. And so we all were just kind of like, well, if things really go to shit, I think I'd rather be at a fish show with 80,000 people in the middle of Florida than wherever else we might have been thinking about being. And so a lot of us were just kind of like, yeah, we're just going to do it, just because when else are we going to get to do it? It's a unique thing. And I do believe it was the largest gathering concert on the millennium, because the news cut in. Peter Jennings famously called it the fish, which was really funny. And I know we're going to get to funny things that happened, because some of it was engineered by Trey in particular that made me laugh quite a lot on that night. But yeah, it was really amazing. And we had a group of eight of us that came. We had four cars, and we had a really nice, great big section to camp in, and just had a really wonderful time. There were giant cypress trees all over the property, so we would just pull our chairs under one and hang out and talk and listen to music. And it was just really fun times.
I believe you. I believe that it was fun. I fully believe you. Yeah, and there was a lot of funny stuff that happened. Where were you at when you got to scream cheesecake back at Peter Jennings?
Yeah, we were, I don't even remember exactly where we were sitting, because honestly, the lawn was so big. It was 80,000 of us. So it was just kind of like, crazy. I remember this like kind of jubilant like energy heading in, especially in between the first set and the show, as they referred to it at the time, that started at 11:35. And I mean, we had these giant blow up hammers that we had gotten. They were like plastic, and we had written "Hi 2K" on the side of them. And we had like, I don't know, 30 of them or something. And we were like handing them out to people. And so we were seeing those go all over the place. And we had like bottles of champagne we were bringing in, and like the security was like high-fiving everybody as we were going in. I mean, it was just this like wild sense of just like, we didn't know what was going to happen. And also that they were undertaking this huge, you know, monumental musical feat of playing from 11:30 through sunrise that next day. And so, you know, we just were kind of hunkered in and like ready to just withstand, you know, and see what they were going to deliver to us. And we knew it was going to be spectacular. We knew it was going to be special, but I wasn't prepared for just how impressed I would be by the end of it, and just how special sharing that time was. I mean, we didn't have cell phones. I have so few photos even from the experience, because I think we might have had like a couple of like disposable cameras, and like that was it. Right. I mean, it really was just whatever our experiences were, just in our hearts and in our minds. And whenever the 8 folks that I went with, whenever we get together, like inevitably there'll be a conversation that turns to Big Cypress for all of us to just tell the stories again and relive it together and talk about it. We'll put it on sometimes even when we hang out. So yeah, it's just very, very forefront of my mind. But yeah, I remember that. I remember the funny parts were definitely the cheesecake bit. What cracked me up the most was that Trey was trying, he had like 6 ideas that he wanted us to do. And so he was like, honestly, just like in the moment, like, let's try it this way. Okay, no, I don't like it. Let's do this thing. Okay, no, just do it one time, but be angry. I mean, it was just like all, you could just see him just like in the moment wanting to do something and trying to figure out what was going to play best on the news and make people kind of be like, what the hell are these people doing? Which I think, at 90s Fish was pretty much, that was their vibe all the time, was to keep people guessing and to constantly have people be like, what are they doing? Which, if I think about it, is kind of where Goose is right about now. Similar energy, similar approach to all the things that they've been doing. It's kind of like, what are they doing now? You know? So that special time in a band's, you know, history or their catalog or their body of work is always very special when they're in that super experimental time and willing to do all sorts of things. So that was really cool. The meat stick gag that they brought back was really spectacular and actually worked and nobody got stuck. So that was very nice to see. And fun and funny. We all were just like cracking up and just like really laughing about it. And I mean, I have a few favorite moments that stick out. Them playing After Midnight before at the end of the first set was really special. It was first time they had played it, and then like it was kind of hitting us like, shit, After Midnight, it's gonna be on, like, oh my gosh, you know, just like them setting us up for, you know, this triumphant you know, show that we were gonna see later on. Yeah, 11. I think we rolled over probably like 11:15-ish to, you know, get a little space and put blankets down and hang out. And when they started playing, I mean, it was just magical. You know, they played "Auld Lang Syne," and then the fireworks started, and then they did "Downward Disease" through the fireworks, and that was just like mind blowing. And then they played, I think, almost every, all of my favorite songs. I mean, they had a long time to play. So they yeah. went deep in the catalog. But like, I'm a huge David Bowie fan. I love Piper, Llama, Heavy Things, Yem, of course. One of my all-time favorite 2001s was That Big Cypress. I listen to it all the time. That is my number one favorite Phish song. So, you know, it's cover. I just am always yearning for it. And so that was really special. And then, of course, a monster of Across Eyed and Painless during that set, too. Yeah. So those are my highlights that stick out still to this day. Like, I just remember them very, very viscerally when I think about them. They were, it was just amazing. I can't say enough about it and feel really, really lucky to have those memories and to have experienced it. It's it can never happen again. I mean, you couldn't get 80,000 people in the middle of nowhere to do something like that again. I mean, just liability changes alone make things like that so, so hard to pull off. I mean, yeah. And it was just great. It was fantastic.
And there's something that makes it special that it's kind of just documented enough. Like you can get the Polaroids that people have, or you can like listen to like people's stories about it, or there is like one video of the whole, like the show. But like, you can't really get a full in-depth experience of what Big Cypress was because we didn't have cell phones, because there wasn't 1,000 people taking a billion videos, and
it's true.
No Twitter. And if you did it now, it would be so captured, you know, it'd be like unbelievably captured by everybody.
You could piece together every second of everything. I mean, there'd probably be satellites taking pictures and, you know, all sorts of things would probably be, you know, utilized now. And so, yeah, it's a very, just a specific time capsule moment that really, you know, me and 80,000 of my favorite friends got to experience together. And it was fantastic.
While you're in the show, are you like, are you cognizant of what time it is? Are you checking like, you know, how close we are to midnight, how far we are until?
They had the like father time gag. So they had like a father time on a bike, like bicycling. And so we could see the countdown part happening. And so we knew when we were getting close to midnight. And as I mentioned, the aforementioned bottles of champagne were kind of, everybody had bottles of champagne. And so, that was really fun. And then we had to do the Peter Jennings thing because they had that planned at a very specific time because it was going to be live. And so that part happened. But then once we got rid of the TV camera audience, like they just went into it. And I honestly don't think I like necessarily looked up at any point. I just was really enjoying the show. I'm trying to think. I remember after they did Piper, I think they went into Free. And that might have been the first time I was like, wait, what time is it?
What are we even doing?
What are we doing now? Yes. I feel like that was so deep into the set. I mean, they played so much at that point. It was the first time I like let myself come kind of out of that headspace. And then also I took turns, like sometimes I would be laying on my back and kind of looking at the stars during some of the songs. Some of them I was up and jumping and, you know, crazy with. Some I was just kind of like zenned out to. So I just allowed myself to whatever I was feeling like doing at any moment, just doing that. And everybody was doing that. You could see people enjoying themselves in all different kinds of ways. And it was, it was really beautiful. And we all had space. It wasn't crowded. And yeah, I can't say enough about the setup. I think that was the thing that really stuck out for me afterwards, thinking back of like how many ways it could have gone left if they hadn't given enough space to X, Y, or Z. Things could have been much more difficult, and they just were easy. It was just a really easy experience to have. They really made it seamless and easy to find things and easy to access the things you needed and all of that stuff. So huge kudos. And I went to it after this. Yeah. Very different experience. I mean, I loved it, but very different experience. Yeah.
Well, I mean, should time travel ever be a thing, that's exactly the place I'm going to go back to is Big Cyrus. So I'll look for you. I'll
look
try to grab
me,
a
yes.
hammer from you. Yeah. I'm going to come and try to find you. But yeah, I mean, what an experience that must have been to have. And it sounds like you're still having great experiences with Phish even to this day.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But that's the peak right there. And people let it you know is. About it. So
they it definitely is. It was funny. I think I was talking with RJ at the Ryman, and we were talking about something, and Big Cypress came up, and he was like, "You were at Big Cypress?" And I go, "You weren't?" Like, my face was just like, I just look at, when you're a certain age and you didn't go, I just look at you like askance. Like, what the hell were you thinking exactly? What was more important? That's how I view it. Like, I really like, it's bad. It's such a judgment on my part. I probably should stop, but I do have that like feeling of like, what was going through? Was there a party you went to that you thought was better than this one? Like, come on, let's be real.
What shitty college house party were you at?
Were you at? Exactly. That's the precedence. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That is funny. Yeah.
Well, wow. I was hoping and praying that we were going to get a Big Cypress story at some point in this podcast, and you absolutely delivered. Absolutely delivered. Thank you so much, Leslie. Do you have stuff that you'd like to plug?
Definitely. Everybody should definitely check out Goose Chicks podcast. We have shows every Wednesday. Our next drop is a mini episode for our Gonna Turn It Up series, where I got to sit down with Canadian indie pop group Peach Pit at Levitate Music Festival and talk with them about their music and their new album. Follow us on socials. You can go to Goose Chicks Pod, wherever you are at, and find us. And a couple other shows I'd call out is our conversation with Goose photographer Adam Berta. Great episode. We also talked to Ben's mom, June Atkin, for Mental Health Awareness Month. She's a therapist and she's freaking brilliant. So definitely check that one out. We also have a really great show called Geese and Their Goslings, where we talk about bringing kids and families to live shows. So definitely check that out. Best practices. I learned a lot from that show myself. And and then follow us on all of the social media platforms. What do I have coming up? I got a lot of music coming up. I'll be honest. I just finished putting my fall winter tour planner together. So I'm going to see my 50th Goose show in Detroit for fall tour. So I'm excited for that. We are going to be heading over to do the UK leg of the Goose Europe tours and Goosemas. So that's the totality of my Goose besides Red Rocks. I'm going to see Rhiannon Giddens again. She's playing here in Greensboro, North Carolina. So I'm heading up there to do that. We're going to see Dogs in a Pile. We're seeing Eggy. We're seeing Janelle Monae. We're seeing O'Teal and Friends. We're seeing Kitchen Dwellers. Shaky Graves is coming to town. So we're going to go see him and his band. So lots of good stuff coming up. I really... pretty much live music is my main source of recreational activity. So it takes up a lot of my time, talent, and treasure. And I'm excited. I think I have like 10 more Goose shows in me this year and like 12 shows outside of them. So excited for the rest of the year in music.
I was going to say, Leslie, you really got to get out and see some shows. It's time for you to go experience.
I gotta actually go experience some things, really get out there with the people. I'm excited to see all of the stuff, and hopefully we'll get a Goose album or two this year or soon or something. I don't know. They've been hinting at stuff. My fingers are crossed. I'm excited to hear some studio stuff from them because Drip Feel was such an amazing album, and I know they've just only gotten better since they recorded that one. So I'm excited for whatever comes next with them as well.
Hey, same. Big same over here. I'm super excited to see what they do with this next album. But Leslie, thank you so much for coming on. Appreciate you so much for doing the show. And you know, if one day for some reason you get Big Cypress topped, we're going to have you come on and talk about that show.
We'll see if it gets topped. I would be surprised, but I'm also open to it. So if it happens, you'll be my first call, Cam, for sure.
Hell yeah. I love to hear it. Thank you, Leslie.
Thanks for having me. Talk to you soon.
That was the best show ever. That was the best show ever. That was the best show ever. That was the best show.
Man, there was fucked up stuff in there.
Yeah, what the fuck was that about?
Ever.
Okay, so that was a little bit of music from Jesus and Fartfinger, but also just an incredible conversation with Leslie Mack about, man, Big Cypress. I had no idea she was going to bring up Big Cypress. And I mean, what a cool conversation about that show and that festival. Loved having her on. I doubt that anything's ever going to top that show, but I would love to have Leslie Mack back. I would love to have Leslie Mack back. You know what I mean? If you like that conversation, we have got a bunch of other cool conversations coming out. We have got other episodes that have come out already on the Osiris Network. Check them out. Look them up. Listen to them. They're a lot of fun. Keep your ears peeled for more episodes coming up. But until next time, guys, have a good show.
Hi, this is Henry Kay, host of the number one music history podcast, Rootsland. Come with me on a journey to Kingston, Jamaica, where we explore the world of reggae music and the untold stories of some of the genre's greatest legends. From the ghettos and tenement yards where the music was born, to the island's iconic recording studios, we are so excited to team up with Osiris Media, the leading storyteller in music. Because as you'll hear, sometimes the story is the best song.